I'm reading from John 13, verses 2, 10 through 11, and 18 through 30. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said, "Not every one was clean." I am not referring to all of you. I know those I have chosen. But this is to fulfill the scripture: "He who shares my bread has lifted up his heel against me." I am telling you now, before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe that I am he. I tell you the truth, whoever accepts anyone I send accepts me, and whoever accepts me accepts the one who sent me. After he had said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "I tell you the truth, one of you is going to betray me." His disciples stared at one another, at a loss to know which one of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, "Ask him which one he means." Leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then, dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, son of Simon. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. "What you are about to do, do quickly," Jesus told him. But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the feast or to give something to the poor. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night.
My name is Judas Iscariot, the man that was just in these verses of scripture that you heard. I was a follower of Jesus Christ, one of his disciples. I was the guy that held the money bag, and I was the man who betrayed Jesus. You know, really, with no intention of my own, I've become quite infamous over the years. Social deviants and rebels have found inspiration in what I have done. I have been a champion because I was such a rebel. And I would imagine that you, as followers of Jesus Christ, that you don't like me. And I don't blame you. I'm not a likable person. I betrayed the man that you call king. And I grew to hate and despise the man that you call your savior. And I was not asked to come here today for the normal reasons that you would have a guest speaker come. I have not done anything heroic. I am not a model of good behavior. Instead, I'm quite the opposite. I'm here today to share with you how I have been an utter failure as both a friend and as a follower of Jesus. And maybe in that, you can learn something from me. Now, to do that, we've got to go all the way back to the very beginning, when I first saw Jesus. I was from southern Galilee in Judea, which means I had like a multiple day journey to get up to where Jesus was up in Galilee. And man, it was crazy. I got to tell you, Jesus was stirring up a lot of controversy and a lot of activity. He was traveling from synagogue to synagogue to synagogue, teaching, and then all these people would come up and they're sick and they've got like things wrong with their bodies, and Jesus was healing them. I mean, it was crazy. Have you heard about Simon's mother-in-law? She was really sick with this high fever. I mean, Jesus walked into her house, and there she was laying on this mat, and you could smell the sickness in the room. And Jesus sees her, and he speaks to the fever in her. And the fever, he told the fever to go away, and it left. Within an hour, she's standing up, she's laughing, she's talking, she's telling the story about how Jesus had healed her, and as a good Jewish mom, she starts cooking up a bunch of food, feeding everybody. It became like this party. And you've probably heard about the leper. Like, here we were, in this big crowd right in the middle of the street, right? I mean, people everywhere, and here comes this leper walking right up the center. I mean, lepers aren't supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to be on the outsides of town. Somebody could get sick and catch leprosy from them. This guy comes right up, falls to his knees before Jesus, looks up at him and says, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Now I'm watching this. I'm like, what is going to happen here? We've never seen this happen before. And Jesus reaches out his hand and he touches him. Well, you're not supposed to do that. You can catch leprosy doing that. I'm watching with this mixed sense of morbid curiosity, really, at this point. Like, I don't really know what Jesus is about at this point. I don't know who he is. And so I'm thinking, well, maybe Jesus is going to get leprosy. Maybe they're going to banish them all. And Jesus, he's touching him, and he says, "I am willing. Be clean." And like in a moment, like this guy, I mean, he was full of leprosy. He had gaping holes in his skin. He was missing fingers. His nose was gone. And I saw like his skin reform. I saw where it used to be this hole in his face for a nose. I saw his nose reform on the very front of his face. And this man stands up. And he is whole. I'm telling you, man, it was crazy following Jesus. You never knew what was going to happen. At this point, it was a huge crowd, hundreds and hundreds of people milling around following Jesus all the time. And I was part of that crowd. And look, this was the most exciting thing going. Who didn't want to be there, right? The normal life in early Israel was pretty boring. You'd work, you'd eat, and you'd sleep. We didn't have a lot of entertainment. I mean, Jesus was entertaining and exciting. And I wanted to be around that. Like, who wouldn't? And clearly, very powerful. Like, he oozed power. And I wanted to be near powerful people. So one night, Jesus goes up into this mountain. He's gone all night. We're just kind of sleeping around and just kind of waiting what's going to happen next. Where's Jesus going to take us? And he comes down in the morning and he calls us all over and he says, "All right, look, I've been praying all night talking to my Father." And we were like, yeah, this is going to be good. Anytime Jesus started talking to the Father, man, crazy things started happening. So he pulls us all together and he says, "It's time for me to select my 12 disciples, my 12 followers." And so he named off Simon and Andrew, the fishermen, James and John, sons of thunder, Matthew, the tax collector. We pretty much knew these guys were in. I mean, Jesus was already spending a lot of extra time with them, giving them special attention. So here I'm standing there, and I figure, all right, like there's 7 spots left. And there's this big crowd of like a couple hundred, and I'm thinking, I'm running through the odds, like what's the chance of potentially me being one of his followers? Because I wanted to be a follower of his. I wanted to be near this amazing, powerful man. Because I wanted power. And if I was near him, maybe I could get it. And so there I am standing, this big crowd of people. I can still remember the sun is kind of cresting over the edge of that mountain. There's a cool breeze coming up from the valley. I can hear the birds are singing in those olive trees. Rocks are kind of crunching underneath our feet, and we're totally silent as we're just waiting for Jesus to start calling out the rest of the names. Who are going to be the people that can follow him and be in his close-knit circle? And when he called out Judas Iscariot, and I felt this surge of electricity radiate through my body, I thought, this is my chance. I'm going to ride the momentum. I'm going to ride the excitement of what Jesus is going to be leading here, and I'm going to get everything I can along the way. I mean, following a rabbi was the most honorable thing in our culture. Rabbis would be the closest, maybe the equivalent in your culture, to like a rock star or a movie star. Everybody wanted to be near a rabbi. Crowds would always follow the rabbis. They were influential. They were leaders. And I wanted to be near that. So of course I said yes. And then, when he put me in charge of the money purse, man, I didn't think it'd get much better than that. Because not only could I ride this wave of momentum, along the way I could skim a little money off the top, pad my pockets. You know, looking back, my temptation and my weakness to the temptation for money and power were a big, big part of my downfall. Because look, Jesus talked about money and power all the time. But I had in my mind like what that meant. And so I misunderstood and twisted the stuff he said all the time. Let me give you an example. So one time he's telling the disciples and me that if we left our homes and our family and everything we knew and we followed him, that we would get 100 times back. 100 times. Like, that's a huge multiplier. I hadn't left that much behind, but you multiply what I had by 100, then it becomes a lot. And one time Jesus was telling us that he was going to rule over Israel sitting on a throne, and that us, his 12 disciples, that we would have thrones as well, and we would rule with him. I had never seen a poor king. And if that was his destiny, and if that was the direction he was going, then I wanted to be right there in it. And I wanted that money. And talk about power. I don't mean, I already told you how he healed the people. But, I mean, what about talking to waves? And then they calm down. One time we're in the Sea of Galilee, and man, we're getting thrown all over in this little boat. We really thought we were going to die. Jesus wakes up, and he looks around. He says, what are you guys all scared about? And we're like, the waves. And he says, watch this. He talks. He speaks to the waves, and he speaks to the wind, and it became instantly calm. I mean, one time we're out in the middle of nowhere, we don't have any food. Two times we're doing that. And Jesus miraculously came up with 4,000 fish one time, and another time, 5,000 fish. Now, as a businessman, I recognize the value in that. Anytime we want, Jesus can just start creating stuff, and when we could sell it, he's giving it away for free. Driving out demons. And then he raised 3 people from the dead. Jairus' daughter died. Jesus raised her. This widow from Nain, her son died. Jesus raised him. And then Lazarus. Lazarus was a close friend of Jesus. We knew him and his sisters. Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. Jesus thought we should take the slow route to get there. We knew he was sick, and Jesus said, let's go around a detour. He is always doing stuff like that. And when we get there, he's been dead for 4 days. He walks over to this tomb where they'd put the stone in front of it. Lazarus is inside, and he says, roll that stone away. And that's not a good idea, Jesus. And he gave us this look that sometimes he gave us when we would try to tell him what was and was not a good idea. And we knew that, all right, don't mess with him. Roll back that stone. And he says into this dark cave, he's like, Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus came out of that tomb. I mean, Jesus was powerful. Powerful. And then, here was the hook, you guys. He told us that if we had faith in him, we could do what he did and even greater things. Well, like, I didn't really know what he meant by having faith in him, but I knew what it meant to do what he was doing and then to do even greater things. And I wanted that, man. I wanted that bad. And it's only now when I look back and I see how confused I was. Like, I was so skewed because I thought that Jesus was all about building an earthly kingdom. That's what I was all about. But Jesus was about building a spiritual kingdom. I thought Jesus was going to use all of his power to, like, rule over people. And instead, it was like he came to serve people and to save them. And I wanted to use power to rule over them. I wanted to use power to elevate myself. And more, I realized that Jesus wasn't about that. And I didn't like it. As his popularity was growing, I mean, these crowds are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They're giving him things, worshiping him like he's a god. Jesus became more and more reclusive. He'd go away and hide. He'd go away and be alone. And I was like, Jesus, this is the chance. Like, get out there. Stir up the crowd. This is the time we can lead the revolution. We can grasp what we want. And Jesus instead would talk about how suffering was part of his future. And rejection by the leaders was part of his future. And death was part of his future. How could I sit on a throne next to him ruling if he's dead? How could I get more money and power and influence if he's dead? Man, I didn't want any part of that. And when we were at Simon the leper's house, this woman walks in. This was the final straw for me. And she had this bottle of perfume. And we knew it was expensive. A whole year's wages was spent on that bottle of perfume. And she starts pouring it out on Jesus. And he's happy about it. Happy. And I'm thinking, hey, look, we could take that bottle. We could sell it. And we could use the proceeds to fund our revolution. More and more, I just realized that I had created this fake Jesus. A Jesus that was going to give me what I wanted. And that the real Jesus was something and somebody totally and completely different. And if I wanted to follow this real Jesus, it was going to take too much from me. Like, I'd have to give up things to follow this real Jesus. I would have to surrender in ways that were too difficult for me to follow the real Jesus. Instead, actually, I preferred my fake Jesus that I had made. And in that, perhaps you can learn something from me. because my heart was so hard that I would not accept his teachings. And so if there's anything that you could learn from me, it would be this, is that hardening your heart against Jesus, it takes you down a really bad path. And that was me. A man with a hard, hard heart. And so when we were there gathered for that meal that you guys call the Last Supper, that was an awkward moment for me. Because I had already betrayed Jesus. I had already struck a deal with the teachers of the law to betray him. I'm just looking for the chance to do it. I'd already gotten my 30 pieces of silver. And here I am sitting around this room of my friends. Like, these are the guys I'd been spending all my time with the last 3 years. And I just looked around at them and I just felt pity for how delusional and confused they were. I mean, little did they know that I was about to end this whole thing. I mean, guys, it's been a good ride. It's been exciting. But it's not going a good direction. And it's going to end. And at least I got my 30 pieces of silver out of this thing and some good stories. And here I am just looking at all these guys, and they're still into it. And I just felt pity for them. And then when Jesus starts washing our feet, what king washes the feet of other people? I mean, who's ever heard of a servant king? I was out. I mean, in my heart and in my head, I'm out. I don't want anything to do with this. And when Jesus said in that meal, he said, "One of you is going to betray me. One of you is going to betray me." I knew he was talking about me. I figured one of those other disciples had seen me striking the deal and saw me taking the money, and they kind of put two and two together and figured out they told Jesus and Jesus knows. So I didn't know what exactly was going to happen, but I knew it was me. I knew I was the one. And when he took that piece of bread, there's just a few of us. It's weird how that table's kind of arranged. Everybody didn't hear this. There's just a few of us. And when he took that piece of bread, dipped it in the oil, he reaches over and he's handing it to me. I'm reaching over and I'm grabbing the piece of bread. We're both holding it. And he's looking me in the eye and I could feel his disappointment. But I could also feel his love. And he said to me, "What you're about to do, do quickly." I wondered, why isn't he doing more to stop me? I mean, if he knows the future, why isn't he stopping me? He knows I've betrayed him. Why isn't he like telling everybody to like tackle me and hold me down? You know, that's not the way Jesus worked. He'd lay the choices out before people so that you knew what you were choosing. And then he'd just let you choose. If it's a good choice or a bad choice, he let you choose. And I'm so blinded by it, I didn't even see that that's what he was giving me, was a choice. And I had made my choice. And when I left the stuffy confines of that upper room, I felt the liberty of being in control of my own life. And it was only later that I realized how ironic that is. So you know what happens next. I led the teachers of the law out to the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus was praying. I walked up to him, kissed him on the cheek. They knew it was him. They grabbed him. They took him in. And they took him to this trial. Like that's not what I had expected, actually. Caiaphas was there. He was the high priest. I was thinking, what's Caiaphas doing awake? This is the middle of the night. Like, why is Caiaphas up? And why is he here proceeding over this trial? And the high priests, they're kind of scurrying around the edges, whispering in people's ears. And then these people would come forward, and they start, like, making these comments of like things they saw Jesus do and things they heard Jesus say. I mean, these were all lies. They're just making this stuff up. And there Jesus was. He's just standing, totally silent. He's not saying a word to defend himself. I mean, here he is surrounded by all of this hostility. And it's moving in a bad direction for him. They're getting more and more and more aggravated and angry at him. He's not saying anything. And at the end, Caiaphas says to him, "Just tell us, are you the Messiah sent from God?" And he says, "It's as you say." And in a little while, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of God the Father. Man, that was it. Caiaphas lost it. Rips his robe, and he calls Jesus a blasphemer. And all the high priests, they start shouting out, "He deserves to die! He deserves to die!" And they start punching him in the face and spitting in his face. They lead him off to see Pilate. As a condemned man, sentenced to death. Now look, I got to tell you, I had no idea that it was going to go down like this. I mean, I was sick. I knew they didn't like him, but I didn't know they hated him like that. I thought they'd give him a lecture, and then they'd maybe hold him for a while so the crowd subsided. Because a lot of people wanted him to be a king. Just hold him for a while. Let the frenzy die down. Maybe send him back to Nazareth, let him take over his dad's carpentry shop. Disperse the disciples, tell him, "Hey, look, it's been a good time, guys, but look, it's over. We're in charge of the spiritual stuff that happens in Israel. This is over. We're calling it quits." And I went up to them in the morning, and I said, "Look, I will have nothing to do with the shedding of an innocent man's blood." And they laughed at me. They just laughed at me. Now look, I need you to understand. I was not sorry that I betrayed Jesus. I didn't want anything to do with what he was about. I didn't want anything to do with his kingdom. I didn't want anything to do with the way he was serving people. I didn't want anything to do with suffering. But I also didn't want an innocent man to die. And so I took those 30 pieces of silver and I threw them in the temple. And now I'm just like, I'm wretched with my own guilt. Like, what do I do with that? Here I was, a person who contributed toward and moved toward a man being killed. He hadn't done anything worthy of being killed. Like, I knew that I was a bad person. I knew that I was a thief. I knew that I was selfish. But I never thought of myself as a killer. And here I am just dealing with the weight of that. And I was a wreck. I mean, I was a wreck. I mean, how do you repay a person for sending them to their death? How much good stuff do you have to do to outbalance killing somebody? I don't know what your answer is to that, but I tell you what I thought it was. It's impossible. You can't do enough good stuff to outweigh that. So I went and got a rope. I found a tree. And I ended my life that morning. You know, I've often thought about Peter. He's one of the disciples too. You know, he's also the disciple who betrayed Jesus three times. the same night I did. Three times. He said, no, I don't know him. Like, what's the difference between me and Peter? That's what I've been wondering. I tell you what, I think Peter had a soft heart where I had a hard heart. And when Jesus rose again from the dead, Jesus and Peter, they had a conversation. And in that conversation, Jesus told Peter, look, I love you. I forgive you. And he offered him his grace. You know what? I was so hard-hearted that my pride would have never allowed me to accept something like that. Because I wanted to somehow try to earn that love and forgiveness. I wanted somehow to make amends myself for the horrible thing that I had done. So I've thought about what might have happened if Jesus and I would have met each other again. And I think Jesus would have opened his arms wide. And he has said, Judas, come here. I love you. And I forgive you. And he would have offered me his grace. And I would have turned and I would have walked away. Because my heart was too hard and my pride was too big. You don't want to be like me. You definitely do not want to be like me.